Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Adam White filling in for Jared Waitley on this Thursday. Anzac Day, what a special day it is on the Australian calendar. Even driving into work this morning, it was such a bizarre feeling and a bizarre look. It was almost dark still when I was driving in, but there were people everywhere around the city who have been to the dawn service, and I'm sure there's plenty of other services right throughout the course of the morning particularly. And then once we get into the afternoon, the shops open and it all sort of goes back to normal. And then there's footy at the MCG when Essendon takes on Collingwood. And then tonight also a massive game, I reckon, in Canberra between the Giants and also Brisbane. So plenty of footy, plenty of sport on SEN right throughout the course of today. But for this morning, we've got a very busy program coming up. Lots of different things to talk about. Brenton Sanderson will join us just after 9:30 this morning to talk about what happened last night. It was such a bizarre game of football. Now, admittedly, I was watching it on the couch, as so many of you that are listening this morning would have been doing. I was very tempted to turn it off at halftime. It was three goals each. It was so full of mistakes, lots of uncontested marks, lots and lots of mistakes again. It was a really tough watch, and you started to question, are Melbourne any good based on how they were playing last night? Now, in the end, they kicked 10 goals after halftime and they won by 43 points, 13-7-85 to Richmond, 5-12-42. But is that really the way Melbourne supporters want their team to play? And is it the sort of football that will win them a premiership this year later on in September? So we'll talk to Sando about that around about, as I said, just after 9:30 this morning. And if you want to get involved, do it at any time on the Alltel open line, 1300 736 736, or on the temper text right throughout the course of the show, 0433 98 11 16. I'm really interested to hear from Melbourne fans about how you feel the team is going. For a team that is 5 wins and 2 losses and in fourth position on the ladder as it stands at the moment, things aren't going too badly, but I don't know. I'm not sure I like the way they play. And is it the sort of footy that is going to win them finals when so many of the good teams can score 100 points? I'm not sure Melbourne can, the way they're playing at the moment when they come up against some of the better teams. I think we'll know more about the Demons over the next couple of weeks with games against Geelong and also Carlton. So give us a call, particularly Melbourne fans, 1300 736 736. And then from a Richmond point of view, the Tigers, you've had so much success. How are you feeling at the moment? It doesn't look too good for Richmond now for this season. Obviously, lots of injuries as well. But how do you feel about Adam Uze? How do you feel about the Tigers? So there's a couple of topics to get us going. 1-300-736-736 or the temper text 0433 98 11 16. Also on the program, as I said, it's obviously Anzac Day. So when I think of Anzac Day, I think of people like Dustin Fletcher, who played in so many of these games for Essendon over the years, and who was actually at the footy club during the week talking to the current Bombers about what Anzac Day means to him, not only from a football point of view, but from a society point of view. So Dustin will come on and have a chat to us. A former premiership captain, well, he's not a former premiership captain, he's always a premiership captain, Easton Wood, formerly from the Bulldogs, he'll join us as well from a footy point of view. And then away from footy, we're going to chat to Lee Broxham. Now, Lee Broxham has played close to 400 games for Melbourne Victory just in the A-League alone, which is a record. And he's decided that he's going to hang up the boots at the end of the season. The final series is not far away. And then Lee, as a 36-year-old, is going to say goodbye to professional football. So Lee will join us after 11 o'clock this morning. and Nick Haslam as well. Now, Nick Haslam is the tournament director of LIV Golf. Obviously, LIV Golf is getting underway tomorrow in Adelaide. He will join us to talk about the significance of playing here in Australia and maybe whether we'll get another LIV event here into the future. So that is the McCafe menu this morning, our official coffee partner. And before we get to our calls, as they start to rack up, here are the highlights from how AFL Nation heard it last night.
Van Royen, can you believe it? He's got the ball straight away, Sando.
Yeah, that's a good start, isn't it?
Kicking to the city end. Van Royen staggers in. It's a beautiful-looking kick. 50 seconds in play. And Van Royen kicks the first. One straight goal, Melbourne.
Baker watches it come over his shoulder. Gathers the bouncing ball. He has a bounce himself. He wrong-foots lever. Links it up inboard. Hand pass comes from Campbell. Away to Graham. Up to Mansell, who's playing behind the teeth of goal. Gives it to LaFau. Sidestep. Onto the boot. Goal at last. My, oh my. They worked for that, the Tigers. And Mikelty LaFau puts it on the board.
Leave it to May. May long to a two. Onward! And a big fly from Brown. Almost dragged it in. Came out to Van Royen on the AFL logo. He's got Petrarca running with him. 52 metres out. Kicks towards the pocket. Taken by Turner. Open goal. Goal Demons. Turner celebrates. It's his first goal in AFL competition. Melbourne lead.
Shea Bolton with all sorts of opportunity. Ralph Smith presents and takes the mark in the pocket. He's got Campbell, or inboard he's got Maurice Rioli. He chooses the latter to tie it up once more at three goals apiece. Maurice Rioli directly in front is the goods.
Petrarca gives it everything. It's not bad. It's to the left though. Last line, Gorn marks it. Maxi's clunked it. About 10 metres out. He's going to have to go around the corner here. Gorn opens up the angle and bangs it through. Melbourne back in front. A low trajectory one to Miller, and then tried to give the drive by to Broad, and they've coughed it up. Costly. Pickett. Pickett was all over it. Snap for goal. Things are opening up. Another one for the D's. A costly mistake. Rioli out to centre wing. Swarm of players here. LaFau couldn't bring it down. McDonald tries to run away with it. Was dispossessed. Coming through was Hopper. His handball to Bolton. And then no one forward of the ball. Bar for Maurice Rioli, who almost dropped it, then goes for goal. That's the one they wanted. He had to keep his composure. He's kicked two.
Banks is after the bouncing ball. He arrives, knocks it on. Houses with him. Banks and Howes. Howes pushes Banks off the footy and wins it cold. Hand pass to Langdon. The Demons reset. Broad backed himself. Made the spoil on Sparrow. Won the footy. Feeds it on to McIntosh. Now they'll go. Kick into the pocket. Onto the chest of Bolton.
Who's played on?
Around the corner. Bolton takes his shots and hits the target. The half forward. Lovely mark taken by Turner. He's going to end up in the votes playing like this. Waits for them to set up up front. Plays it for Fritsch. Worked his way to the front. Van Royen's the crummer. Off to Petrarca. And into the pocket for Laurie. Another. That'll end it for Melbourne. Bailey Laurie, as the sub, applies the last rites. 32 points. A bridge too far now for Richmond. Melbourne win the showpiece game on Anzac Eve with a powerful 10-goal burst after halftime as they opens the gap in class to be a chasm. The margin of victory, 37 points.
It's the emblem for me and for you. It's the emblem.
Gerard and Matt actually made that game sound pretty exciting when you listen to that. The final score, 13-7, 85 to 5-12, 42. As Gerard said, Melbourne kicking 10 goals in the second half to really step on the gas. Richmond only kicking two goals. Let's get straight to your calls. So 1-300-736-736. It is the Alltel open line. Your impressions from a Melbourne point of view, from a Richmond point of view, or even just from a footy point of view with what you saw last night. Scotty from Surry Hills can open the batting for us on this Thursday morning. G'day, Scotty.
G'day, mate. How are you? Yeah, good. Mad Demon supportive. And thank God the pre-game acknowledgement of what Anzac Day means was so good, because that was the most atrocious 43-point win I've ever seen. That first half, Melbourne couldn't hit a target. They were playing lacklustre football. And I think we're all playing for sort of second place. If you listen to your callers and the commentators, the Blues have got it, haven't they?
Well, I don't think they've got it, certainly. But, Scotty, from your point of view, as a Melbourne supporter going last night, with what they put up in the final series last year and then what you see last night, is there enough of a difference to think that you are going to be better this year if you get to September?
No, wouldn't have thought so.
And how does that make you feel?
I think we're wasting a very good list. I'm trying to be glass half full in most things in life, but I think they just haven't got that connection down pat. They've probably done a bit better moving forward this year, but I guess the only positive, Petrarca, Oliver were a bit down over the last couple of weeks, or last night, and still got the win. As I said, probably the worst 43-point win I've seen in a long time. But, you know, you take the wins, 5-2, but, I don't think we're contending this year.
And it's a couple of interesting temper texts that have just come in. Adam, please have a look at the Melbourne team last night and the number of players with less than 35 games. And then there's another one here. As a Melbourne fan, the frustrating thing is after the Port Adelaide game, they showed how good they could be, but then they don't show it enough. That's from Mayo. And I think that's there's two parts to look at Melbourne. There's the glass half full, which is how well they played against Port Adelaide. And then the way they played last night against Richmond, I think, is interesting. But with the amount of inexperience that's there, and I think also the other thing too is the amount of Melbourne senior players that are probably, particularly in the midfield, down away from their best, might be making it a little bit more difficult for the Demons. Scotty, thanks very much for your call. Adam is a Richmond fan. He's calling us in from St Kilda. Good morning to you, Adam.
Hello, Adam. Yeah, I'm a Richmond supporter. I'm also a member of Melbourne Cricket Club. And I'm watching the game along the Melbourne, along the members area. It was just a lot of slow play, a lot of clogged up players, a lot of scrimmages and just a lot of heavy tackling. So it was just a very slow game. So I don't think those kind of games, that kind of game, will get you into a grand final like Collingwood, where they kick the ball and hand pass it all across and they just move along quickly.
All right. Thank you for your call, Adam. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's an interesting... I'm not sure about Melbourne. I'm really not. No, we did this show a couple of weeks ago and I was convinced that Melbourne were the team to beat. But just having seen them play a few times since, I'm now not so sure. And I'm really keen to talk to Brenton Sanderson about what he thinks about where Melbourne are at and whether this game style is the sort of game style that will win them finals. That's the question. And I don't know the answer, and I'm not sure whether Sando knows the answer, but I think it is a big question about the Demons with this almost preoccupation with getting all those numbers down into defence. And, yeah, it's really hard to score against them. It's really hard to play well against them. But then it makes it hard for them, particularly on turnover, on transition, to be able to score themselves. And it feels like it's not the way forward, but I'm not a coach as well. The number to call on the open line, 1300 736 736, the 40 Winks temper text, 0433 98 11 16. We'll take a break, come back with more of your calls. Sando not far away, and we'll hear from both coaches from last night as well, Adam Uze and also Simon Goodwin. It's an Anzac Day on SEN. Yes, it is. Mornings for Hyundai. Adam White filling in this morning on Anzac Day. You can give me a call on the Alltel open line, 1300 736 736. Alltel, the better business telco. We have got some prizes to give away as well. We've got Signet Boost power banks valued at $44.95, and we've got a few other things to give away as well, including some Underworks vouchers worth $50 as well. All day socks by Underworks, the comfiest socks ever. Temper text, there's plenty of them coming through as well. Before we hear from the coaches last night and take more of your calls, here's a bit of a snapshot as to what's coming through this morning. Cannot believe how impulsive and compulsive footy commentary is. Melbourne beat Port Adelaide in Adelaide, Adelaide in Adelaide, and everyone was saying that their bottom sixes are the ones that have improved. That's from Steve. We won a grand final playing that game style. Last night looked horrible because it was skill execution, not method. Drawing any conclusions from it is naive. I'm with you, Adam. Not sure about Melbourne. I'd be happy to play them in the finals. Go Blues. That's from Jezza. And still a long season. Melbourne's worst version is the best, but we're hung up on their best not being as good as other teams. They will be there at the pointy end of the season. Go Blues. There's a lot of Carlton supporters that listen to SEN. There's no doubt about that. So there's a bit of a snapshot off of the temper text. What about Adam Uze? What did he think last night from a Richmond point of view? Formerly at Melbourne, obviously as a player, but also in the coach's box. The Tigers went down, but these were his initial thoughts.
We knew that coming in, that we would have to obviously perform and compete really hard for four quarters. And I just thought, to our boys' credit, I thought our effort and intensity was strong throughout the game. It was just our execution. Just spoke to the players about it now, and they're pretty honest with the way they look at their game. And their polish in front of goals and their skill execution was just better than ours. And they got reward for effort and we didn't. So that's the game. Yeah, it is hard, and it's it is a brutal game, but we expect our players to do that and show up every quarter. And as I said, to their credit, I felt like the pressure and the intensity didn't drop off. It was just our execution. When that happens, like, you're putting in all that effort, you miss opportunities with skill execution and a bit of polish around goals and our inside 50 entries. And then they go down, score a couple full ground transition goals, and it can just dent your spirit a little bit. But to their credit, as I said, I thought our effort and intensity didn't drop off, which is something I'm really proud of. I think it's one of the first games that he's played with tape on his knee. So we originally thought that it was something to do with the tape and whether the tape was too tight, things like that. So, and he hasn't hurt his hammy before, so he tried to stay out there and run it out. And I don't think he's made it any worse, but I think the fact that he had a tape knee made it a little bit uncomfortable and disappointing for the guy, because he put a power of work in, trained really hard, made sure that he was ready to play, and to be fair, he was pretty important for us early. So just feel sorry for him. Hopefully it's not a bad one, but I think it's just a minor tweak. Yeah, well, hopefully it is a short term, and it is a slight tweak, so we'll wait to the touch wood every time I say that, because we're having a bit of trouble with what the results of our scans and stuff. So so we'll just wrap our arms around him. He's a terrific guy. He's a really strong leader of our footy club. If he's going to miss a game or two, we'll get behind him, and he's a professional guy that will get himself back.
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to be I'm envisaging 6 weeks' time when we get a lot of our players back. The selection's going to be really hard based on the fact that what our young players are showing. They're getting opportunity through adversity. And to watch Thompson Dowd today play against a quality midfield, felt like he took a step forward in his career. Seth Campbell's getting opportunities. Morris Rioli Jr., he looks powerful. He looks dangerous around goals. So the more that we can give those guys opportunity, which we have to right now, the future's going to be bright for them when we get everyone back available. So there is a silver lining in the fact that getting opportunity. Tom Brown is taking his game step by step. He's into his fifth game, and each week he looks like he's improving. So so there's a synergy element to that as well. They're starting to get a real good understanding of playing together. So when we get some troops back, it's going to be exciting for our club for sure. You look at Shea Bolton's form. Dusty's got a fair bit to say in the way that he's playing. He's trying to impart his knowledge. So the way that the lasting legacy that Dustin Martin can have at this footy club is upskilling our younger players. So Shea looks up to him. A lot of our younger forwards look up to him. So for him to be able to teach him at training and obviously give him some insights on high performance and the way that he did it, like, they just soak it up. So if he could do that for our players for the next few years, will be a lasting legacy. And I know he enjoys it, but our players are just soaking that up. So his leadership around the place has been terrific. And as a coach, I love seeing it. So hopefully he can keep doing that, and our younger players can excel.
Richmond coach Adam Uze there after last night's loss to the Demons. So the player that he was talking about with the strapping around his knee was Jacob Hopper. So he's obviously going to get scans now to determine what the actual injury is and how serious it is. And you could see, during the game, just how emotional he was, having missed so much footy to start the season. He gets back into the team, gets so much of the ball as he was last night, and then get injured again. So he was obviously very, very frustrated. So the Tigers now 1-6. So it's been a real baptism of fire, hasn't it, for Adam Uze as the new coach at the Tigers, having a go at the senior job for the first time. So 1-6, their next four. They've got Fremantle next week at the MCG, then the Bulldogs also at the MCG, Brisbane at the Gabba, and Essendon at the MCG for Dreamtime. So that is the Tigers' next four. A couple of temper texts before we hear from Simon Goodwin from last night. 17 scoring shots to 20. Richmond couldn't convert and Melbourne couldn't miss. It was 17 frees to 5 after half time. That helped Melbourne. Pretty ordinary game all up based on that performance. Another one here. Carlton supporters are the most arrogant supporter base, which doesn't really reflect where they have been since the late 90s. Win something, then be critical of those that have won something. That might be a sensitive Melbourne fan that's just texted in there. Other things to remember is that Melbourne played about 7 first and second year players last night. A couple of texts have come in saying that. Maybe they've found a few. And another one on the free kick count. Free kicks, 17 to 4 in the second half. That can't be serious. Richmond never win the free kick count. I've got a lot of Richmond fans that remind me about that all the time. Okay, Simon Goodwin. We've heard from Adam Uze from a Richmond point of view. Simon Goodwin, what did he think of the game last night? Just also a bit of a snapshot of other things that came from last night's press conference.
It was a pretty scrappy affair. You know, I think anyone watching the game, some of the turnovers, it was extraordinary, to be honest. It made a few people laugh in the box and certainly down the bench. Like, that's just pretty unlike us in terms of where we were turning the ball over and how easy we were turning it over. But one thing we're really hard on is how we stay really optimistic and positive in situations that are stressful. You know, I've seen games like that before when you execute with a ball like that where you get beat. But our players stayed in the now, they stayed positive, they stayed optimistic and they worked their way through it. And in the end, they come away with a good win.
We knew that coming in, that we would have to obviously perform and compete really hard for four quarters. And I just thought, to our boys' credit, I thought our effort and intensity was strong throughout the game. It was just our execution. Just spoke to the players about it now and they're pretty honest with the way they look at their game. And their polish in front of goals and their skill execution was just better than ours, and they got reward for effort and we didn't. So that's the game.
And the footy, what needed to be tidied up at half-time, do you think?
Jesus, everything. Oh, I wouldn't have wanted to be a spectator for that game. I would have gone to bed at half-time.
It was a pretty scrappy affair. You know, I think anyone watching the game, some of the turnovers, it was extraordinary, to be honest. It made a few people laugh in the box and certainly down the bench. Like, that's just pretty unlike us in terms of where we were turning the ball over and how easy we were turning it over. But one thing we're really hard on is how we stay really optimistic and positive in situations that are stressful. You know, I've seen games like that before when you execute with a ball like that where you get beat. But our players stayed in the now, they stayed positive, they stayed optimistic and they worked their way through it. And in the end, they come away with a good win. Oh, we had a bit of a chat about it at half-time. You had to sort of break the ice a little bit because it was, you know, it was pretty obvious to everyone what was going on in the game. So we spoke about what the method was required and what we were doing well, but also just to stay calm. The execution will come, just stay positive, stay optimistic about what we're trying to achieve here. And eventually you could see it starting to turn, and by the end of the game it felt quite strong. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got some strategies in and around track and how we can maximise his use. And clearly teams are putting a lot of time into him. You know, he's had a fantastic season so far, but his demeanour and his mindset and his ability to work in contest areas for the team was outstanding. And that's all we need from him, is to compete and execute his role for the team. And you know, in the end, he worked his way into the game nicely. Yeah, I think, you know, Greg Stafford, you know, forwards coach and the coaching group, you know, we put Daniel Ford in the VFL and, you know, we liked what we saw. And we had a really good discussion about it this week, and it really was about what are some of the attributes that he brings that could help us as a team. And he brings an aerial game, he brings air to ground speed, and he had impact tonight. So for our coaching group, it was a brave call to make, and we got our awards tonight. But you know, Daniel knows he's got a lot of work to do. He hasn't played too many games as a forward, so he's still a lot of growth in his game, and we've found one there.
Yes, he's listed as a key defender, Daniel Turner, and he kicked three goals for the Demons last night, including his first at AFL level. There was Simon Goodwin with a bit of Christian Petrarca thrown in there as well during the course of that. Christian Petrarca, I think, epitomised what a lot of people thought of that game, fairly frustrated with it all. Let's get the latest from the newsroom with Vanessa Gibson. Yes, it is Adam White filling in for Jared Whateley on this Anzac Day morning, but you can hear from Jared from 12 o'clock today live from the MCG with all the action, all the build-up to the big Essendon-Collingwood Anzac Day clash. Now, we've been talking a lot about last night's game, what we thought of it, how frustrated we were watching it on the couch as a neutral, and even from Melbourne and Richmond fans. But Brenton Sanderson was in the box. He was watching it all live for AFL Nation, and I'm very keen to know what he thought of last night. Sando, welcome.
No, my pleasure.
Now, you were in the box last night with AFL Nation watching Melbourne defeat Richmond. It was a very interesting game. I'll say interesting, particularly the first half. Why was the game played the way it was?
Yeah, it was a strange old game, wasn't it? I mean, I think and during the call, there was just so many unforced errors, so many fundamental skill errors from both teams. And I don't know, in the call, I sort of thought initially maybe it was, you know, a little bit of dew on the ground, a little bit of pressure, the ball's a bit slippery, but I just think the pressure from both sides was right up. I thought the tackling was excellent, and the way that both sides obviously were really desperate with their front half defence was just awesome. But obviously then that resulted in a really scrappy, quite ugly game at times. And it was just so frustrating that no sides could connect inside forward 50 on the back of some really bad skill errors.
So if you were in the Richmond coach's box at halftime, would have you been happy with the way the game was played? Because they were going in as the underdog against Melbourne. But while they might not have been playing attractive footy, the fact that they were matching it with the Demons on the scoreboard, would have Adam Uze been happy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it sort of felt that was probably not the only way, but it was one of the ways that they could win the game is if they got it in a contest, kept it quite ugly. And I mean, I thought their grunt was excellent. I mean, the way that they applied themselves to the contest was first rate. They just lacked that polish and that poise. They couldn't get the ball in the hands of guys like Bolton and Martin often enough. And I thought Martin had a really good first half, but they just lacked that sort of poise and class, particularly with that final kick inside forward 50. So they had the volume of inside 50s, but they just weren't able to get that sort of connection piece right. And don't forget too, Melbourne have got a pretty elite defence when you talk about May and Lever and the pressure that was up the field. So those guys were able to sort of come off and defend and intercept whenever they wanted. I just thought that the adjustment Richmond didn't make was the sort of lowering their eyes inside forward 50, finding that short option to sort of get a few more better looks at goal, I guess.
So going to the style that Melbourne plays, and they've made some adjustments from last year, but a lot of it is about getting a heap of numbers back in defence.
Yeah.
And then they find it hard to go quickly because all their numbers are in defence. Is that a way forward for Melbourne that can be successful, or do you think they still have to tinker with that a little bit?
No, you've nailed it, Whitey. I think that's probably part of the issue that they've got at the moment is they are a defence-first team where they obviously limit the opposition's scoring capabilities, but then when they do win the ball, quite often they just don't give their forwards a chance to reset, to get their sort of six forwards back ahead of the ball. So at times last night, when they could have gone fast, they had to stop and pause and wait just to allow their forwards to get back ahead of the ball. So that's, I guess, the chicken and the egg. What sort of comes first with Simon Goodwin? You know, it sort of feels like now sides have got to kick big scores. You know, you're looking at sort of 100 points plus now with those sort of top four, top six sides. You know, they're putting up some big scores. And if you can combine that, get the balance right with your defence, and that's, I guess, going to, you know, be their objective longer term. But, yeah, frustrating at times last night. They were better after halftime, and obviously the game opened up and they could find some mark targets. But, again, I think they went over 130 marks again last night, which just probably means they're going a little bit sideways, a little bit short. They're not really taking the game on in offence as much as what they should be at the moment. They're playing a lot of tempo footy, which is sharing it around, making the opposition defend when they've got the ball, and yeah, waiting and being patient for those opportunities to go forward. But does that win in the big games? We'll have to wait and see later in the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to criticise in a way. They won last night, and they're 5 wins, 2 losses. But I'm just interested in your thoughts on why do they play the way they do? Are they protecting parts of their game that Simon Goodwin isn't confident about, or is it more just that's the way he feels the game should be played?
I guess it's just his philosophy at the moment, and he probably looks at his forward line, and they've got some good young players there. They're probably still trying to get the mix right. You know, Petty just doesn't look like he's comfortable as a forward at the moment. He had another sort of low possession night as a key forward last night, and they dropped Ben Brown, and obviously Pickett came back into the side, which he had to. He's such an important player for them, but They have got a lot of kids still. So when you look at the squad last night, there, I think it was six or seven players in that team, you know, with less than 50 games experience, and most of them are less than 10 games experience. So they're sort of getting that balance right now with those sort of veterans who we know are A-graders. And now, you know, introducing some younger players into the side who are sort of probably learning this game style as well. There might be some moments of frustration for Demons fans, but yeah, I think ultimately if they get it right, it's a long season and they'll just keep tinkering as the year goes on. But yeah, I think the positives are there. I'd be taking a glass half full approach if I was a Melbourne fan. If they just get that connection right, they need some more inside 50s. Only 50 inside 50s last night, which is the same number as what Richmond had. So yeah, if they can find another 10, 12, 15 inside 50s, I think they're going to be a really serious contender later in the year.
I was going to ask you, you still see them as a genuine top four chance or a premiership contender based on what you've seen, not just from last night, but over the first couple of months of the season?
No, I do. I still think they're a top four side, just with the quality through the midfield. You know, Max Gorn was exceptional again last night. They double teamed him most of the night, but he's just so good. I think he's in his own tier in the ruck. And if they keep their midfield fit and fresh, you know, obviously with Petraka and Oliver and Viney, and I thought, you know, Viney was just a little bit off last night, but there's just so much quality and class in that side. And yeah, if they keep bringing in these young, talented players, I seriously think they could be a real contender later in the season.
We're talking to Brenton Sanderson, part of the AFL Nation team here at SEN. Anzac Day, we're going to speak to Dustin Fletcher a little bit later on about what it's like to play on Anzac Day. You were in the coach's box only recently with Nathan Buckley on Anzac Day. How special was it to be part of one of the biggest days on the football calendar?
Yeah, it's almost my favourite day. I mean, you sort of think about, obviously, grand finals are what you crave, but the opportunity that Essendon and Collingwood get each year to be involved on one of the special days on the calendar, yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. You know, the energy in the stadium, the last post, you know, it's just so good to be at the MCG. And if you're lucky enough to get a ticket, it's certainly a massive thrill to sort of be in the stadium. And we should get a great game today too. It sort of feels like, you know, Collingwood might be back close to their best. They had a, you know, great performance after the bye last week. And the Bombers, outside of that Port Adelaide game where they were beaten quite badly. You know, they've really improved. Their young midfield's getting it done. Some fantastic, you know, passages of play last week. You know, it looks like this could be one of the great Anzac Day clashes today, with two sides in you know, really, really good form.
It does feel that. So you feel that Collingwood are back from what you've seen against Port Adelaide, or might it still take a while before we see them at full throttle like we saw last year?
Yeah, they looked refreshed last week. I think the bike probably came at a good time for them. They got a sort of good training block in. They were able to get back to their best with their front half pressure. And I think they've been relying too much on transition footy and that sort of scoring from the back half. But I thought their front half game was back last week. That pressure in the forward line, they restricted Port Adelaide to only 84 marks, where they'd been giving up sort of 100-plus to the opposition, you know, to sort of start the season. So when you spend so much energy defensively, it just, you're sort of gassed out when it comes to, you know, taking the game on, and that real run and punch and exciting offense that we've been accustomed to with Collingwood last year, I guess, or even the last 2 years, it just hasn't been there in the first half a dozen games of the season. But we certainly saw that, you know, particularly after quarter time last week against Port. So Essendon, that's what they've got to try and slow down today. If Collingwood go fast, can Essendon defend them for four quarters? I think that's going to be the big challenge. I sort of expect it to be pretty tight for most of the game, but my sort of gut feel, Whitey, is that Collingwood might just have too much run for them, particularly late in the game.
Yeah, so it's interesting with Collingwood because of, I guess, you know, it doesn't matter who the premiership team is, that you hold them to such a high standard that the following year, but it is a long season. You've got to be peaking at the right time. So if it was that Collingwood started the season slowly, that might have been an ominous warning to everyone else with what they did after halftime against Port.
Yeah, it is always a challenge, and we know the season sort of gets longer and longer. You know, it's almost a 30-week block now when you look at from sort of the start to the finish, and with the buys and the gather round, and we had round zero this year. It's it is a slow burn. And obviously last year's premiers, they have the break, they celebrate, players go in a little bit later for surgeries and things like that. So we probably expected we wouldn't see the best of Collingwood till sort of round sort of 7, 8, 9, 10. And I think it would be unwise to write them off too early in the season. There's still too much talent there. We know their game plan stands up. If they're playing a front half game and defensively frustrating the opposition into turnovers in their front half, they're going to be a really hard side to beat again. So, as I said, I still love Essendon. I think what Brad Scott's done there, he's been coaching really well the last couple of weeks with a couple of little strategic moves when he's been tagging players and the way that they've sort of adjusted their game plan. They get Peter Wright back today, which will be a significant difference in their forward line. He's such a focal point for the Bombers. So, yeah, it all points to a really exciting Anzac Day game today.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And before we let you go, you talk about Collingwood and peaking at the right time and the other grand finalists from last year, Brisbane. Are there concerns for you with Brisbane? It's a big game tonight against the Giants. Are they getting too far behind, or have they got enough time to fix it?
No, they've got some problems, but I think the class is still there. They just, what was such a fortress for them last year at the Gabba, they've obviously undefeated there last year, and this year they haven't won a game at home. But they're sort of road form's okay. They had a really good game 2 weeks ago, so it's really hard to understand when it's all going to click for the Lions. But I'm not writing them off yet. It's just whether you think you can be a top four side, you know, when you sort of start the season as slow as what they have. They're certainly going to have to turn the corner pretty quickly. But as I said, I think the class is there. The game plan's right. It's just whether they can win some of those games at home, beat some of the top four sides away, and then all of a sudden they're back right in the mix.
It's such an even competition. Who knows what's going to happen? Sando, I really appreciate your time. I know you're doubling up because you did have a chat to Jared yesterday, but I was interested in what you saw last night because, as I said, watching on television, it was a hard watch, and I was very keen to know exactly how it all unfolded. Thanks for joining
us
today.
Anytime.
Brenton Sanderson joining us there talking about last night. You can hear Sando tonight. He's part of the AFL Nation team with the Giants taking on Brisbane in Canberra. That game after the Essendon-Collingwood game from the MCG. Okay, welcome back to the program. Adam White filling in for Jared Waitley on this Anzac Day Thursday. Don't forget, from 12 o'clock, it'll be Mari and Gazy. That's from 12 till 2. And then the call team come in from 2 o'clock at the MCG with all the action between the Bombers and the Magpies. We're going to go back to 2015 now. Can you remember this moment on an Anzac Day match?
If we're taking requests, this has to be a tour. The crowd willing him on. Kilcher, he might check it anyway. He has. Oh, the Magpies, we don't take requests.
So what about Fletcher? Two goals in 95 in the draw match in 95. One in 02, one in 08 and one in 15. It's just crazy stuff. It's ridiculous.
So that is Dustin Fletcher in 2015, a set shot from inside the centre square to the city end that went through. And as Bruce McAvaney said there, he played in that first Anzac Day game in 95 and then played his last Anzac Day game in 2015. That is a lot of Anzac Day matches to play. And Dustin Fletcher joins us on Mornings on SEN. Dustin, thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you. Looking forward to the big day. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I mean, you played in so many of these games, including the very first one, and you've also played in grand finals. You've won premierships. Where does this rate in the career of an Essendon footballer?
It rates, very highly. I don't put it in the category, and it's a hard one to explain. But I don't feel like, when you're out there, I don't feel like it's a final or a grand final. I think that's it's a totally different feeling you get when you're out there playing, but. For me, it's one of the best, the game you want to be involved in, and it's got meaning to everyone. It's not just you're playing Richmond. You've got Richmond and Essendon supporters. Everyone's got a feel for Anzac Day, and it's very special.
You played in the first one, and it was a draw, and it was a very dramatic finish, and It was a dramatic day with so many people wanting to get to the MCG. Did you know in the build up to the game and then when the game was played that it was going to be the start of something very special?
No, not to that degree. I remember, and I was a bit painful. I like to get, you know, when I drove into the game, I like to get there right on that 2 hours before a game. And I remember this particular game, I was actually about 20 minutes late and it got halfway through the team meeting. There were quite a lot of players that were late, but you've sort of got to think back, you know, 1995, every game you played was a Saturday, basically 2:20.
Yeah.
And to turn up that Anzac Day on a Tuesday and, you know, Sheeze and Bruce Rucks and they've got together and come up with the concept, it was literally the gates were shut, I think about quarter to 2:30. And we didn't know what to expect, but once we got to the ground, I'll tell you what, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it certainly was. Do you think back to that day often? Is this, you know, you played 400 games, so there's a lot of games to reflect back on, but that one of such significance, as I said before, you talk about grand finals and premierships, you're part of those, but that particular day?
Oh, I do, there's no doubt about it. And it's I was, you know, very lucky with Sheets and you know, with the build-up. And, you know, he spoke to us a lot about, you know, what Anzac Day meant, the history. And, you know, we went to the Shrine. We did all those type of things. So, and Mick Malthouse was the same, speaking to Collingwood people. He was exactly the same as Sheets. So everyone's been touched by Anzac Day, and I was no different. My grandfather, he was part of the Battle of the Coral Sea back in 1942 as an air gunner. So I sort of understand a little bit of that history before, you know, I was quite good with that because Dad, you know, my dad's dad passed away when, you know, Dad was only 8 when he passed away. So it's got unbelievable significance, and at the end of the day, that's what it's about for me. We recognise Anzac Day in a way that's very special.
And the impact it had on your teammates across the years, the education part of it, the realisation of the significance of the day, not worry about the football, but the significance of the day. You were very lucky to be in that situation that you had all that, I guess, additional education, and you had people like Kevin Sheedy that were so passionate about it. It was almost like going back to school in a way, but it helped shape you as people.
It did, and that's, you know, that's why Sheeds was so great. And it was only, you know, only during the week I was lucky enough to be asked down to speak to the players and the staff of the footy club with Joe Watson and Travis Cloak from, even though he's there now, but from a Collingwood point of view. And that's the thing. We all said the same thing. We're very lucky to be playing on this particular day. And I spoke to a couple of the younger players and, you know, they're not playing today, but, you know, they're on the list now. And a lot of them, all they want to do is be able to play on this particular day. So very special. And I think the young kids now understand that a lot about Anzac Day and what it actually means.
So what do you tell the players when you were there during the week? What are some of the messages you can give as a 400-game Essendon veteran?
Oh, there's probably two, really. And, you know, I fought with it a little bit, you know, early days when we, you know, that minute silence and, you know, they ask about what goes through your head. And in those early days for me, 95, when I was only 19 or whatever I was, it's a bit of a tough one because you're not sure. You want to play well, but you probably don't want to. And I sort of blocked it out a little bit at the start. Like I thought, don't get too emotional and just, you know, concentrate on the footy and just focus on the footy. But the pregame goes for, you know, it's a good probably 20, 25 minutes of pregame that you've got to take in. So as I got older, though, you know, I think I actually let it soak in for that 5 or 6 minutes and just, you know, reflect and have a real, you know, good think about, you know, what the Anzacs did for us. And then I think there's a time where, you know, straight away you can switch back to football. But, yeah, it's a bit of a tough one to explain. But unless you've sort of been out there and you're standing there, but it's still a very, very special moment. I think, as I said, the players understand that now that, you know, Essendon and Collingwood play on Anzac Day every year. You know, they're very lucky to do that.
We're talking to Dustin Fletcher, who has played in plenty of these Anzac Day games, and there's another one this afternoon at the MCG. Dustin, just your views on the footy club at the moment and how it's going. It's been a long time since the club has had sustained success. They go into the game this afternoon with 4 wins and 2 losses. They played some good footy this year as well as some pretty ordinary footy. How do you see this group of Essendon players?
I think they're in a pretty good spot, and the reason I sort of say that, I think with the coach we've got at the moment, I think he realises what the group he's got. He's had last year and this year. Yes, we've been sort of up and down in win loss. We've won our last two, but the thing I'm sort of happy with is, and even though the last two weeks, just the pressure that we've sort of been putting on clubs. And if you've got that starting point of pressure in matches and you can sort of sustain that for a fair bit of the match, it just gives you the chance to be in games and win games of footy. And, if you're watching today, that's going to be the key for me. If we can defend the ground and have that pressure for a fair part of the game, well, we're probably going to get one or two chances to take the game, and we'll see what happens after that.
Do you feel this is a group of players that can have some success for the Essendon fans that have been waiting a long time?
Yeah, I do, but I think I'm realistic as well we've got to get better as there's players that are going to get better, and we've had some, and not putting pressure on these guys because they are all coming along, quite well, but we've had some, good low picks in the draft, and we've got some good young players on that list, and you've seen a bit from Perkins and Harrison Jones. We've been fantastic the last sort of two or three weeks playing that forward role. So it's a bit of pressure on those guys because, they were low picks and you want them to perform because you need those to perform. So I think we're in a pretty good space, but, still some work to be done. There's no doubt about that. But good space, but let's keep working hard.
And just one final one on Anzac Day. I mean, so many people will reflect back on what James Hird did on so many occasions on Anzac Day. For you, what made him such a special footballer? Not just his kicks, marks and handballs, but the impact that he had on the teams that he played in?
Oh, it's a hard one. He's the best player that I ever played with. And I think the short answer is too, and I was only with him last night and he spoke about his Anzac Day medals and what they meant to him, and they asked him which was his best one. And for him, he says the one in 2000 because, if you think back, he missed a fair bit of 99 with his navicular injury, and we lost that one by a point. Coming back into that season was very special. But at the end of the day, it wasn't about the goals he kicked or all that type of things. I think when he had to put his head over the footy and we needed someone to give us a spark, it always got back to James Hird, and that's a sign of an unbelievable player and one that, as I said, was the best player that I played with.
So he coached you as well as a teammate. I'm just interested in when he was a player, did he inspire with words? So before an Anzac Day game, he'd get everyone together and sort of motivate them. I know you had Kevin Sheedy to do that as well. Or was he someone that just mainly did his motivation through actions?
I'd say, to be honest, it was... he probably wasn't a massive, massive speaker. So when he sort of did speak and he did, get the boys up and about and going, he was really good. But he probably didn't do that as much as some other captains I've had or some other players in the group. So I'd probably say in a way that a lot of it was inspired by his actions. But again, in best of both worlds, when he did speak, you knew he was speaking for a reason, and he could inspire that way as well. But actions to him were, I think, even the way he trained. Like, I've never trained with someone that could, do that to himself and his body. He just trained like an absolute animal, and that followed. And we tried to follow suit in that regard.
Yeah. Now, before we let you go, and I appreciate your time, I've got to ask you about your boys because they're off playing college football. I've heard a little rumour that they might actually be playing together or at least on the same team very soon, Dustin.
Yeah, that's right. We had a bit of the youngest ones put in the transfer only just a couple of days ago, actually. And to cut a long story short, we're pretty happy as a family that he's making his way across to Cincinnati, and he's going to join Mason in his final year. So all it means is you'll have a bit of that family connection there. Mason's obviously big year for Mason. It's his final year, so he'll have to have a big year if he's going to go in the draft and go from there. But, so we're absolutely over the moon that Max gets to join Mason at Cincinnati as a red shirt. Also gives him two more years left of eligibility, so he'll be able to go on and do his Masters before he takes his go at the big time. So big news. We're really excited, and we're looking forward to the season starting. Still got a while to go, though.
So it's almost like a handing over of the baton from one brother to the other.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they might be arguing about who's going to get the 31. But but it's funny, actually. It's believe it or not, the teams are so big over there that there's a chance that they could both put the number 31 on. So that'll be interesting.
Wow. Now, as I'm talking to you, amazingly, there is the 95 Anzac Day game on the television. You're kicking goals, multiple goals. I know you've been asked this a lot, but full back or full forward if you had to choose?
Oh, mate, you've only got to ask Lordy. I think all the money men go up front and kick the goals. But I think I do kick a few goals on a couple of Anzac Days, but I won't pump myself up too much because I reckon I've had a few kicked on me down the other end. That's why I was down full forward way.
Dustin, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. If anyone knows what it's like to play on Anzac Day, it's certainly with you. You played so many of them. Really appreciate it. And good luck with your Bombers this afternoon.
Great. Thanks. All the best.
Dustin Fletcher joining us there. So Dustin started his career at Essendon back in 1993 and finished it in 2015, finishing with 400 games. I do remember a game way back in 1993 where Essendon were playing Fitzroy. It was a Friday night game at the MCG. It was a big game, sort of early part of the season, about round 7, round 8, about this time. And he chose to play for his school, Penleigh Essendon Grammar School, rather than playing for Essendon on a Friday night. Yes, Adam White filling in for Jared on this Anzac Day Thursday. The Alltel open line, 1300 736 736. Or you can also send us 40 winks tepid text 0433 98 11 16. Just interested. Well, we've got a bit of a gap here of some of your favourite Anzac Day memories. Andrew from Nidri has given us a call and he has got one. Andrew, welcome.
Oh, I have. And thank you for filling my time before I go off to the big game today. We're looking forward to a big win.
For who?
Essendon, 2009.
Are you an Essendon? Hang on a second, Andrew. Are you an Essendon or a Collingwood?
I'm an Essendon, yes.
Okay, just checking.
Essendon supporter, and we're looking forward to a big win. Probably about two goals today. I hope that's what we win by, maybe a bit more. If we're lucky. That's a big win in our book. But anyway, 2009. Sakarakis is kicking the winning goal, but the last few minutes of that game was sensational. Now, I couldn't go to that game, had to go to a christening, which I was not very happy about. And I was following it through my phone, but it weren't going too well, and I thought we were gone. But I was able to get home just before the end, last couple of minutes, and we were about three goals down with about two or three minutes to go, and then bang, it must have been one after the other. We just got there and won the game on the siren, basically, and it was a memorable, memorable day, and even if I didn't go, and we normally go to these games, so I think most Essendon supporters will think that's probably one of the best wins ever for an Essendon side against Collingwood.
Yes, there's a couple of texts that have come through mentioning the David Zaharakis goal, which is obviously one of the most famous goals in the last 20 years across all games, really, just with the significance of it. I remember, Andrew, being at that game working, and it was either the Collingwood or the Essendon race. I think it was the Collingwood race because I had to go downstairs and do some interviews post-game. And, obviously the noise was just ridiculously loud through the last 5 minutes. But I just remember the ball being in flight down to that city end where I was, and it just felt like time had just gone into slow motion, and it was just silent as the ball spun towards the goal as to whether it was going to go through or not. Everyone just watching the red share, and it was raining as well, so it was it was quite bleak with the lights on. It was a really quite dramatic atmosphere, and as it went through, and then just the noise from that was amazing. And then being in the rooms with the Essendon players, it was a very, very I've got vivid memories of that as well, as so many Essendon fans would as well. Andrew, appreciate your call on the Alltel open line, 1300 736 736. The two that stand out for me, an Essendon one and a Collingwood one, we were talking before about James Hird. There was the Anzac Day game that Julian De Stoop was talking about on breakfast this morning, where James Hird was just incredible. He kicked four goals. He had nearly 30 disposals. It was the same game that Damien Cupido kicked five. I think they were redoing
the Ponsford stand at the time said the red paint at the top of the goalpost because it was a construction end at one end of the ground. But the way that he just inspired his teammates with the way he played that day, some of the goals he kicked, some of his just actions out on the field that day was James Hurd at his absolute best. And it was a day that I'll never forget. It was sort of early 2000, I think around 2004 maybe. And then there was the other game, was it 2009, I think Lincoln Allen, our producer, was saying, when Paul Medhurst, 2008, when Paul Medhurst went crazy. Matthew Knights, I think, was the coach of the Bombers at the time. And I reckon he tried about 12 different players on Paul Medhurst, who was a bit of a controversial move for Medhurst to move across to Collingwood. And it hadn't gone particularly well. But on that day, he was totally unstoppable on the lead. And it was quite remarkable what he was able to do for Collingwood on that particular day. So there were a couple of standout performances throughout the course of the years. There's obviously the draw that stands out from the first one, but just individual acts on the day. Because sometimes, and you think of Andrew Lovett, Mark McGough, players that sort of announce themselves as footballers on that day from nowhere, it has that capacity to do it. Whether it's sometimes it can happen in a grand final, but when it's a home and away game, it's amazing, particularly through the years of Mick Malthouse and Kevin Sheedy, who would often put youngsters in on that day to give them the experience. And some failed, but some of them were quite spectacular as well. Now, there's a couple of temper texts here that I want to get through that I've sort of parked for a little while because I tend to agree with both of them. The Collingwood-Essendon match should be the only Anzac Day game. We don't need the Melbourne-Richmond game or the GWS match. Play them on the weekend. The Collingwood game should be a standalone for Anzac Day. And there's another one here, John from Brisbane. Several years ago, there was a push for other teams to play at the MCG on Anzac Day. I feel as though Collingwood and Essendon are locked in now, and I totally agree they should be the two teams that remain. I'm of the view that I don't mind the Melbourne-Richmond game. I think that's fine. But I do personally think there should only be the one day, the one game on the actual day. I think it just makes it just that little bit more special. And I think if we have too many games around it, it tends to dilute the specialness of Essendon and Collingwood playing on the day. I understand that team supporters that don't support Essendon or Collingwood, that they tend to miss out a bit of FOMO and all those sorts of things. But I just feel that it only needs the one game on Anzac Day. That's just my view anyway. We will go to the news because Vanessa Gibson is ready. Thanks, Vanessa. Plenty of temper texts coming through on 0433 98 11 16, particularly around Paul Medhurst and quite a few sensitive Collingwood fans. It was a good choice to go for Paul Medhurst. Absolutely it was. But as I said, it was quite controversial at the time because in his last year at Fremantle, he only managed 12 games and only kicked 12 goals. So it was a risk to take Medhurst on. In his first year at Collingwood, he kicked 24 goals, but it was his second year at the Magpies where he played 24 games and kicked 50 goals, where he actually became an All-Australian. So it certainly worked out very well, but at the time there was a lot of controversy over taking Medhurst. And he was that sort of player that he wasn't a Ginnivan type, but he was a bit lairish and could have some great days, but he also had some pretty ordinary days as well. But that day at Anzac Day was certainly very special. And another text here, Mason Cox kicking the first goal with his first kick in the first minute on Anzac Day was so poetic and brilliantly scripted to introduce this USA giant into Aussie rules folklore. Another temper text coming through. That was definitely a very special Anzac Day moment. We're going to take a break and we're going to switch codes next. Still football, but we're going to catch up with Lee Broxham, who has announced his retirement from the game of football. 384 games for Melbourne Victory in just A-League games. If you can include all competitions, 459 games for the same club. It is an amazing achievement. He'll join us next on Mornings on SEN. Yes, it is Waitley on this Anzac Day Thursday. Adam White filling in for Jared for the next hour or so. We're now going to talk some round ball action because Lee Broxham has retired after 459 games for Melbourne Victory across all competitions. He'll finish this season, but it's all coming to an end. And he joins us on SEN. Lee, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, it's finally ending. When did you come to this realisation?
I guess it's the way the season's panned out for myself personally. And yeah, the last few months, just thinking about it gradually and yeah, in the last few weeks, it was, just kind of come to the conclusion and let everyone know, let the players know, let staff know, I guess, what I was thinking over the last few months. So,
How do you feel about it? As you sort of now, as you let people know and everyone wants to congratulate you and reflect on your career as we're going to do now, how are you feeling about it?
I mean, I guess, you know, seeing some comments from some of our supporters and members that have been around since I've been around, I guess, you know, it's a bit sad. You know, I'd love to play forever, of course, but... it's mixed emotions, you know. You're up and down a little bit. You're sad that you're not going to be able to run out on a pitch many more times. But, you know, I'm excited for doing something else as well. And, you know, happy for what I've been able to achieve. So just a range of emotions, but I'm sure it's the same for most people. And, I think the next month or so will be a bit of a roller coaster ride. But, I guess that's just what it is.
You've achieved so much. Is there one thing that stands out that you're most proud of?
I think it's just achieving, you know, the ultimate success of the club, being able to lift trophies with the club. The platform gave me an opportunity to go to an Olympics as well and, represent the national team ever so briefly. But, you know, these are things you dream of as a kid. So, I think the whole journey has been, it's been a privilege, and I've just met some awesome people along the way as well.
So I think it's 459 games you've played for Melbourne Victory, and there's 384 A-League games. But for it to all be at the same club, when in the world of a professional footballer, generally speaking, you played a lot of different clubs across the journey. Yeah. But for you to do it all at the one club, how significant is that for you?
It just felt normal for me, you know, like year after year, I've just staying at the club, you know, it's just kind of what happens, I guess, you know. But I think, you know, I'll reflect back maybe in a few years' time and sort of see how big it is, you know, in the current game. And, you have a lot of ambitious players and clubs trying to be, go about their business in a savvy way too. So there's a lot of factors where, you know, players move on or don't. So it's getting very difficult for players to stay at clubs for such a long time. So I guess, you know, the comments now, I'm starting to realise that. Like I said, it's been a privilege for me to stay so long and have amazing supporters that, you know, whatever drama or controversy we've had over the years, you know, the next year they're back there again. So it's pretty amazing and I feel very honoured.
Is loyalty important to you in the way you go about your life, not just about your football, or was it more the fact that they desperately wanted to keep you all the time because you were such a good, dependable, consistent player for the Victory?
Yeah, I mean, when things have come up, it's, you know, it's not really considered as much, you know. I think especially after, once I turned 30, you know, or once I had the kids and stuff, we were set up and, you know, it was almost just a walk into the office handshake agreement that we'll go again next year on similar salary and let's go ahead, you know. So it was kind of just, business as usual towards the end. I guess when I was younger, there was a lot more unknowns, you know, like all the young kids coming up and, you know, there's a lot of coach changes and, you know, so a little bit less certainty then. But, my parents, my friends, my family have been able to come watch me play football, which not everyone gets. If you ask footballers, you know, sometimes they're out in the world by themselves and no one comes to see the games. I've been really lucky to be able to do that in my hometown where I grew up. And, it's been awesome to me.
We're talking to Lee Broxham, who has decided to hang up the boots. He's played, as it stands, 384 A-League games for the Melbourne Victory, more than anybody else. Lee, I'm interested in some of the coaches that you've had across the journey, because with the Melbourne Victory comes some pretty high-profile coaches, Ange Postecoglou, Kevin Muscat, Ernie Merrick, even the coach that you've got now is one of the biggest in the game. Take us through some of the similarities and the differences and the ones that impressed you the most. I'll put you under the pump.
Yeah, I guess, you know, all the names that you mentioned, and you know, current coach as well. I think just their attention to detail along the way, and their desire for success, and their work ethic. Coming with their football knowledge, of course. You know, just really put them in good stead to be successful. I think, you know, with all the coaches we've had, you know, they all have their own way of how they view football and how they go about it, and all the little details that they have, which has been really great for me to learn along the way. You know, I still remember all the little details from all the different coaches, and it's just been, you know, their desire for success, their work ethic, their commitment, you know, and that together with how they know the game. It's, no surprise that they're all being successful.
Ange Postecoglou is obviously he is now the highest profile coach that you've played under with what he's doing now at Tottenham. Back then, I think you were 24 when he was coaching you. What was he like as a coach and to you at that time?
I mean, he was, he knew his stuff. He's very, very demanding. He wanted things done in a certain way, and you know, as you see now with him, how he does it at Tottenham, it's, you know, it's his way or the highway. So it was the same back then. That was 10 years ago or 12 years ago, and I'm sure he's matured and learned a lot along the way as a coach. But I imagine a lot of his fundamental beliefs are still pretty similar, and it was great. You know, it was only a brief 18 months or so he was all together there, but it was insightful, and you always knew that the way, you know, his self-belief and the way he put together a team and gave you belief that you always felt like you were going to succeed, and no surprises, continues to succeed.
I was going to ask you about that. Did you think at the time that he could one day be a manager of one of the top teams in England, and that those philosophies would carry through to one of the top leagues?
I don't think that thought ever crossed my mind at the time. I think, you know, if you were to say it then, I don't think many people would believe you. Just the time you're in, you don't sort of think that far ahead. You sort of know that success wherever he goes, and you know that it's limited. You don't see many Aussie coaches sort of going on and getting opportunity, with sort of the perception, I guess, of Australian coaches and footballers overseas sometimes. So when he took the national team job, you knew he was ambitious, and you knew he was good. And taking jobs like that and going to Japan and being so successful, that doors were going to continue to open, and they have. So I wouldn't say I was certain he's going to be Tottenham manager, but, you know, I'd be happy if he was a bit of a pioneer for Australian football and coaches.
And what about Kevin Muscat and that time? Because you were a teammate of Kevin's at the Victory, and then he then goes and coaches the team and coaches you. I'd be interested in that dynamic of, it doesn't happen a lot where your teammate becomes your coach.
Yeah, I mean, big age gap between us, but we, you know, as a group, we got along really well, and, you know, I got along really well with Kevin. We're good friends when we're playing. He mentored me at the start as well, you know, to help prepare me for life as a footballer, and become assistant coach. So there's sort of that, still have that bit of a connection as assistant coach, but then you sort of started losing a person in football a little bit. You have to distance yourself, and then like the head coach is kind of, yeah, he had a little bit of banter more than some of the others, maybe, but, you know, you lost a friend, you lost someone that you kind of got along with, because how it had to be as a head coach. It's a, you know, it's a lonely gig, and that's just what it is. The transition sort of year where he went into assistant coach, and that was still a bit of fun, but after that, you know, he was coach and I was player. Maybe I was a bit cheeky here and there where others couldn't be, but apart from that, it was, it was great for him, but, you know, you sort of lost. You still get that contact, still speak to him now, but, you know, it's at that time, it was a little bit different, of course.
So, 4 championships at the Melbourne Victory, but I wanted to ask you about the 2015 time where You won the grand final. You scored famously in that game against Sydney FC. I say famously because there's only 7 goals over 384 games, but you certainly knew when to score them. But just that, was that the best team that you were part of with the victory? It felt that that year you were almost invincible.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be one of them. I think people really do forget about the, the 06, 07 team as well. That was a team that, only won the league by December,
Yeah, that's true.
Won the first 7 games straight. So I always compare it to probably that team, I think. And the 2014-15 team was, just a great group of people. Desire for success, I didn't come without it. Headbutting because everyone wanted to win and do well, and our foreign signings come in were amazing. We had a few Socceroos come back at the time, and it was just a really, really great team. Stayed pretty injury free, and it just felt like halfway through the season there was no way we weren't going to win the league at the end of the year, and that final in 2016 was I think. I watched it back for the first time, I think about a year ago with my son, and didn't realise, never watched it back before that. And, we absolutely killed him in that final and just sort of made me realise how good some of the players were and how well they played.
Absolutely. A couple more before we let you go. The best player? Is that too hard to ask? You play with a lot of good ones.
There's been so many. I said the other day, because we're a Melbourne Victory and, we attract a lot of high-profile players and, the club has spent money on bringing players in. There's been a lot of great ones, so, really can't pinpoint any one player, There's been so many, been lucky to have so many good ones played with you. With our success, we played in the Champions League too and, attracting players to come play Champions League and, players we played against in the Champions League. Unreal as well. So,
it's,
been privileged to play with some of the great players
that
have had great careers and contributed to the club really well.
What can you do this year? You've sewn up a spot in the finals, so it's still a live chance that you could have the absolute fairy tale finish. Is it a realistic chance?
Yeah, well, when you think about the final process, I guess, we're guaranteed a home final now. Preliminary final, however you want to feel, the quarter final, which is a home advantage. It's obviously a final, so it's going to be tough. But, you get through that, and then you have a home and away semi-final where anything can happen again. So, we're definitely in a good spot. Would we like to have a rest round one, of course, but, we put ourselves in a position where we won from in 2018, so we know we can do it. We know it's possible, and I think it's focusing on a good result this weekend, building that into the next final. And as we know, you're not always in these positions, so we're going to grab it with the 2 hands and give it everything we have.
Now, Lee, you do realise that when you retire, you're going to have to do a lot more around the house with your triplets. You're not going to have the excuse, "I've got to go to." Got to go to training, or I've got to focus on my football. It's going to be a big change for you.
I've still got to work. I've got to have a couple of months off, but I still have to work. But I've been hands-on the whole time anyway, I've had no choice. I've had to dive full in and help the kids. And, they're getting a lot better now. They're getting a lot older. They're part of my goal to keep playing until they understood what I did and enjoyed coming to the games and, I think being able to go so long, it's been a credit to my wife Sam as well. She's steadied the ship at home and made sure that I've got a clear mind when I'm leaving the house to be able to continue playing. Each year we say, should I go again? It become a family decision the last sort of 3 or 4 years. So she's always given me full support and to help being able to go so long. I think so. Bottom line, I think I'll still be
still be washing the same amount of dishes, don't worry.
No, Sam has been fantastic, and you have as well, Lee. A terrific career. I love the fact that it's all at the one club and you've broken so many records along the way. Congratulations on the career, and hopefully there are still a few more games left as the A-League gets to the most important part of the season. Thanks for joining us on SEN and reflecting back on your career.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the support over all the years too. It's been awesome.
No problems at all. Lee Broxman joining us there on SEN. And our next guest is going to explain the links between the two, but also what the world means on a day like this. A real life example. Easton Wood was the captain of the Bulldogs when they won their premiership back in 2016, and he's now a retired footballer, but he is on his way to the MCG today to watch the Bombers and the Magpies, and he joins us now on SEN. Easton, thanks very much for your time.
No worries. Thanks a lot for having me.
Now, I remember when you retired, you said you just physically declined. How are you feeling now physically?
Much fresher, mate. Much, much fresher. But yeah, towards the end of my time, I just started to notice, yeah, that started to athletically decline a little bit in terms of speed and power. And whilst I thought I could probably, you know, make a way to carve out a role, it just kind of felt that, you know what, if I can't be at my best, then probably time to hang them up. So I did.
It's been a couple of years now. What have you been doing with yourself?
Well, we actually took a bit of time off the 12 months after. My wife and I were pretty burnt out after the COVID period, to be fair, and needed a bit of time to decompress. We had two young kids, 14 months apart during COVID, and thought, let's get out of here and get out of Melbourne. We were a bit jaded by everything, so we actually moved to Bali and lived there for 6 months.
Right.
Yeah, so it was nice to get that freedom, and then came back to reality, and yeah, I've been working in a corporate role for a recruiting company, recruiting, accounting and finance roles now, so a bit of a change, and yeah, really, really enjoying the 9 to 5 and having a bit of spare time on weekends with the kids.
I wanted to ask you about that. Someone that goes from a professional footballer to a proper job, a 9 to 5 job, an adult job. What's it like, you know, being so different, I guess, your world these days?
Well, it just takes time. Like, there's a lot of transferable skills you learn from football and, you know, and performance in particular and being in teams. But, there's a lot of things that I had to adapt to. And, I mean, I'd never really written emails before, so I had to dust that off and figure out how to write proper English. It was just been a nice shift. It's been challenging at the start. I mean, because you go from being a subject matter expert and working for, you know, 0.1% of gain to now trying to build an entire new foundation. So that's a very different process. And, I suppose I thought I was tired after pre-season. So, I mean, I got home after my new job and just all the winning, my brain was absolutely fried.
Yeah.
But it was good.
So without getting sort of too deep and meaningful, what's it like going from a footballer, a professional athlete, to someone in the workforce 9 to 5 from a family point of view? Do you feel you're a better dad, a different dad, a better husband because you've got the structure of a 9 to 5 job and not the pressure of an athlete, or is it the other way around?
No, absolutely. So the one thing about to be successful in football, you have to be inherently selfish, and it has to come first, and the needs of that have to come first. So having that removed certainly makes it a lot more room to be actually put the family first and have that time apart, set aside for them and be able to prioritise it. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying that change of pace and being able to be a little bit more relaxed and less neurotic, I suppose, with
saying. We're talking to Easton Wood, former Western Bulldogs Premiership captain, who is going to the footy today. But, Easton, the reason we wanted to talk to you is to sort of broaden out and get a bit more perspective attached to Anzac Day rather than who's going to win this afternoon, Essendon or Collingwood, sure. Because you've got a brother that serves overseas and representing Australia overseas. Well, firstly, I'd love to know his name and where he's currently serving.
Sure. So he's Lieutenant Colonel McLeod Wood. So he's done quite well to climb up the ranks these days. He's done 3 active tours over his time. So 2 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Iraq. And he's currently based in...
Oh, we've just lost Easton there. I think he might even be on the train on the way into the MCG. We might just try and get Easton back because this is an important part of why we want to talk to Easton. So his brother's name is McLeod, and as I said, he just said he served three times overseas. So we've got Easton back now. Sorry, Easton, we just lost you when you were talking about McLeod and where he served or where he is currently serving.
So he's Lieutenant Colonel at JRC at the moment. Two in Afghanistan and one in Iraq. Quite decorated.
So when he is serving overseas in some pretty dangerous places, what's that like for a family?
Well, it was so the first time he went away, he would have been 22, and I was, I think, at the time, 19. So he was serving in Darwin at that point. So we flew up to Darwin to say goodbye because he only found out 24 hours before that he was going on. Whirlwind, and growing up as two brothers, you kind of fight your whole existence and give each other a fair bit of a hard time. And then you're going up to fly and say goodbye. It was one of those, moments of, geez, you kind of all hit at that point of like, I don't want this to be the last time. I don't want you to go. And it was quite, I wasn't prepared for that, I suppose, at the time. And he was away for 10 months, and you only get a certain amount of contact here and there. It was always a stressful period, one you're very proud of, but one that I'm certainly glad he's not over there. I'm not actively serving in a conflict zone at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it goes without saying about what dangers are attached to that sort of role. Is the family more nervous about things than actually McLeod, who is doing it? Obviously, there needs to be an element of bravery and courage, a significant element of that, to go and do what he does. But just sometimes it's almost like the family are the ones that are more nervous than the person that's actually doing it.
Oh, absolutely, because he's trained his whole life to do it, so he wants to execute his skills and serve. So he's very black and white in that manner and very good at what he does. It's certainly the family that does all the stressing, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. So is that it for him now? Has he done what he wants to do in relation to being a serviceman, or would he go back into combat or back into that sort of role in the future?
Well, I suppose that all depends on what happens around the world. But
yeah, that's a good point.
He's very... very committed. He's keen to get command of a unit at some point. That's his goal, to be promoted to colonel. So he's on that pathway, which is great. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him just keep climbing as he has done already.
Right, okay. So you were talking before about how you can take elements of sport in a professional environment and take it into the business world. What about what he does, taking it into the sports world in relation to teamwork, executing under pressure, those sorts of things? Have you spoken to McLeod much about how, particularly when you were playing, as to how you could actually learn things to take to your teammates at the Western Bulldogs?
Yeah, we used to speak all the time, and particularly when I became captain of the club, we'd speak in great detail about certain things that were happening or decisions that need to be made, and he was always a great sounding board for that. We're obviously operating very, very different spheres where, I suppose my skill set and strengths as a captain was coming from a point of empathy and understanding and getting to know and, I suppose taking the time to understand what was happening, whereas in his sphere doesn't have that luxury and it just needs to be order, execute, and what's required. So we had some really great discussions around that. He probably helped me be a bit more efficient at times, not get bogged down, which is probably, something that I could get into. But we certainly had fantastic discussions around that over a long period of time.
Yeah, I could imagine. So we see in sport now, Easton, that it feels like... not so much that people are more attached to their feelings. I'm trying to think of a way of putting it, but the way that Craig McRae coaches Collingwood and the way that they become so vulnerable to each other. Richmond certainly went through that when they had a very successful period. When it comes to the Army, has leadership and the way things have done, has that changed as well, or is it still done pretty much the same way because it isn't sport?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure I'd be able to answer that, to be fair, not being in there. But, look, it's a very, very different sphere, and I suppose we, in football we have that luxury of time, and we have that luxury of it not being... You know, we say, you know, win at all costs. But
yeah, that's right.
It's just not that. So it was quite funny. Early days, you know, a lot of the football gets compared a lot to going to battle and all that kind of thing. And it used to make me quite uncomfortable as a young guy when, you know, having those comparisons and whilst my brother was overseas and actively serving, and just thinking how false that was. That, you know, I could go to the game and it was guaranteed that I'd be coming home. And, you know, that wasn't his luxury. So, it was so those comparisons, whilst I can completely appreciate them, I don't think they're totally accurate or apt all the time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think we've all fallen into that trap at times of making the comparison because I guess there are comparisons, but at the same point, you can't compare. And I totally understand what you mean. So when we come to Anzac Day today, what does it mean to you and to your family? Is it celebrated? Is it recognised? How is it recognised when it has more significance to you compared to another family where there isn't an active serviceman involved?
I think it's just a great day to pause, reflect, and appreciate what our ancestors have gone through, and you know my family's got a decorated history of service, First World War and Second World War, and then obviously the attachment with my brother who's currently serving. It's a really good day for us to reflect and appreciate and share that appreciation to my brother and the broader services community for what they give up and sacrifice for us to live pretty safe and happy lives.
Now, my mum is very big on family history, and we've had, like I'm sure most families, in fact probably all families, have had someone back in the family lineage that has represented our country at war. And it's a very big day for her and our family. But tell us about Ancestry.com and how you can understand more about your family history, because I know it's something you're big on. Reckon there's a lot of families out there that could learn a lot from knowing a bit more about what you're going to talk about.
Absolutely. So Ancestry.com have been able to go through our records from our family of the different times that they've served. So got a great snapshot of my paternal great-grandfather, George William Nelson Cox, who served in the Light Horse in the First World War. And he was there for the duration. He did get a bout of sickness and had to return to Australia for 3 months. But, he was serving in the supply line initially in Egypt. He's had some interesting time across there where he ended up wanting to be a soldier, I suppose, be closer to his mates on the front line. And that's the theme that always kept coming back, because that theme was mateship. You couldn't do it for your mates, but I could see through his records. And he actually got a bit of a, in his record, he had a bit of a reprimand for going AWOL, without leave, in Cairo, I think, for about 7 days, and came back and had to still complete his duties. But I think they had to be tied to a post for 2 hours of the day for 2 days. So
right.
It's a pretty brutal situation there. But, he had a great service and luckily came back. And, thank God, because that's why we're here.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. So with Ancestry.com, it's not just about getting names and almost filling out a family tree. You actually get a bit more context around what they do.
Exactly. Yeah, so you can have those entire service records from his entire service, and you can go through each of your ancestors to do that, which is fascinating to get an idea of where they were, what their rank was, where they moved to, what position they were in, and it gets a really good snapshot of what was happening at the time and what they would have experienced.
Yeah, that's amazing. I reckon my mum is...
Take a walk through their shoes and try and...
Yeah, definitely.
Try and picture it through what they would have been going through at that time. And even thinking, you know, just the trip over there, it's a six-week trip on the ship. And, you know, he got sick and had to come back. That's a six-week trip back to to stay for 3 months and then only have another 6 week trip back across. So God knows what that 6 weeks on a ship would have been like in those times.
Yeah.
So it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. So what you could do is, I know my mum will be doing this after she's listened to this interview, piece it together with free access to select military records at ancestry.com.au. So that's ancestry.com.au. Free access ends April 26. Registration is required and also terms apply. So, Easton, we really appreciate your time and giving you a bit of an insight into your family and the significance of Anzac Day. One last one on the footy. It's a two-part question. Can the Bulldogs get it together? And who is the team to beat this year?
the Doggies can. They certainly can. We've seen glimpses. Need to find that consistency, get that rhythm. And we all know what momentum can do. So hopefully the boys can build that little bit of momentum, get some confidence and roll on from there. In terms of the team to beat, the Baggers are looking pretty good. A few of my mates are big on them and all I keep hearing is lids off, so it seems to be that way.
Yes, it's a scary thought, but I think you might be right. Easton, thanks very much for your time. Enjoy the footy today and good luck with all that is ahead of you.
Appreciate it, mate. Thanks a lot.
Easton Ward joining us there, Western Bulldogs Premiership captain from back in 2016, and his brother is currently serving. He's not in active service at the moment, but currently serving for his country. McLeod Wood is his name. And if you do want to know more about your own family history and who's been involved in serving for Australia, address again, ancestry.com.au. Free access ends April 26, which is, of course, tomorrow. Yes, we've got a bit of time now to go through some temper texts and maybe a call or two as well on the Alltel open line, 1300 736 736. The temper text is 0433 98 1116. Before we go through some texts, we also have got a couple of Signet Power Boost power banks to give away. Signet Boost power banks, that's hard to say, valued at $44. We have got a few prizes to give away from the prize cupboard. But Melbourne's weather today, 15 degrees is the current top, with an expected top temperature of just 16 before the footy starts. So 15 at the moment, a top of 16 and a shower or two. That is a message from United Energy. Be prepared for extreme weather. Sign up for SMS outage alerts at unitedenergy.com.au/notify. Okay, so some texts that have been banking up, temper texts over the last hour or so. Adam, could you have a word on Kuhneman moving from Queensland to Tassie for more Shield cricket and the implications for Australian selection if Lyon is injured against India and upcoming subcontinent tours next year? That's from Tony from East Bentley. So that has been confirmed that Matt Kuhneman is going to Tassie to play cricket. And I think that's a smart move. Tasmania don't really have a top line or front line spinner. They've got Froggy Freeman, who's an off spinner. He's pretty good, but also can bat as well. But importantly, he's an off spinner. So Kuhneman spins it the other way. And also bowls with the other arm. So he's clearly got a point of difference there if they were to play two spinners down there in Tassie. But I think it's just about opportunity, because Mitchell Swepson will always get games ahead of Matt Kuhneman if they're going to play one spinner. And there are times where Queensland don't play any spinners at all, particularly up in Queensland. So I think that's a smart play from Matt Kuhneman. Where does he sit in the pecking order of things if Lyon was to get injured? I still think he's down a little bit. Unless it was in India where they're looking for that left arm finger spinner. I still think Todd Murphy is the next in line, because he did so well when he's played for Australia in the past. But I don't think there's any doubt that Corey Roccacioli is coming with a bullet, and he's not too far away from national duties either. I really like the way he goes about his cricket. He's only 25, 26, so he's still got a lot of good cricket to come, a lot of improving to come. So I think they're the next two in line outside Nathan Lyon. And interestingly, they're all off spinners. So we still haven't got that next leg spinner. Lloyd Pope was going to be that player. He still might be. He's still quite young. But to me, it's either Murphy or it is Rocchioli as the next cabs off the rank. So thank you for that text, Tony. A couple of other ones coming through. Be very careful with the Bombers on Anzac Day. 3 wins from the last 14. Can't run out 4 quarters of high-intensity finals-type football. Is today the day the Essendon Football Club stands up and announces themselves? You sound like a commentator, texter. Interesting comments there. You've got to be kidding yourself, Adam. Having an interstate game commencing at 7:30 after the Pies Bombers Anzac Day clash continues the celebration of the day. It is not a Victorian competition. It is an Australia-wide competition. Thank you, Wayne from Hawthorne. Another one here. Couldn't disagree with you more. I think it is ridiculous that Collingwood and Essendon keep playing the Anzac Day game every year. It should be shared between all 18 teams. That is from Simon. And if Collingwood win today and Carlton win on the weekend, we will have a blockbuster next week. Carlton versus Collingwood. Can you imagine the crowd? It'll be epic. It could be the biggest regular season crowd ever. Maybe even 100,000 people. That is come through from Dean. It'd be a big crowd. There's no doubt about that. And you'd think, even regardless of what happens over the course of the weekend, that Carlton would probably start that game favourite. Another texter, a tip of texters come in here. Who would have thought that a premiership captain wouldn't have the most impressive resume in the family? That's in relation to talking to Easton Wood a little bit earlier ago with his brother serving in our active service a number of times for his country. And the other thing that has come through, that's come across my desk, Essendon plays at the MCG today for the 500th time. So I wonder whether it'll be a milestone that they'll be celebrating a little bit later on this afternoon. And it's not surprising that Dustin Fletcher has played most games of football in an Essendon jumper at the MCG. So there's a few texts that have come through. We've got to get the latest from the newsroom shortly with Vanessa. But don't forget, after the next break, the executive tournament director of Live Golf, Nick Haslam, will join us. So there's so much to talk to him about with what's been going on in the world of golf, particularly with the focus on Adelaide this week. But we've got to get to Vanessa because she's got the latest in the news. Okay, before we go to a break, and as I said, we'll be joined by Nick Haslam after the break from Live. It's been an interesting little period in golf for obvious reasons with Live versus everybody else. And, you know, they all came together for the Masters, which only happens now 4 times a year. I'm not sure whether that's a good or a bad thing, but it is a big week. And there was this massive story going on about the fact that Liv had gone to Rory McIlroy to join Liv, and it was going to happen. It was a massive rumour last week. Well, Greg Norman had a press conference yesterday in Adelaide and was asked about whether that in fact ever took place. Here he is, Greg Norman, yesterday.
I'll make the comment, if you look back over that time period of that dialogue that was going place, there wasn't one comment about Liv. So Liv never put an offer to him. We didn't need to make a comment about this. This is just typical white noise that gets out there in the industry. If Rory was willing to sit down and have a conversation with us, would we be happy to sit down with him? 100%. No different than any other player who'd be interested in coming on playing with us. It's understanding the facts about what Liv represents and what Liv can deliver on a global basis. That's up to you to determine it. I mean, I've sat down with one top PGA Tour player in his house with another member of my team and walked him through the whole process. And he was so impressed. He said, well, that's not what we're told in the locker room. Right? And this is really impressive. But he made the decision. He called me up 2 days later and said, I've decided to stay where I'm at. I said, happy days. You made a decision on fact. And if you're happier over here, fine. Stay there. Your door is always open. If you want to come back and have a conversation with us, happy to do that.
So that was Greg Norman. So the rumor was that he'd followed Rory around at Augusta and that all sorts of things were going to happen and he was going to get a lot of money and he was going to switch camps. Well, that hasn't happened, at least at this point in time. One thing I'll say about the golf that still frustrates me, and John Rahm talked about this yesterday. This is where I get quite sensitive, where he was talking about how significant the Australian Open is, and it's one of the great tournaments around the world, and so much prestige. Jack Nicklaus has won it. Gary Player's won it. Obviously, Greg Norman's won it. It's you know, golf, it's a great country for golf down here, you know, but they don't come and play. They talk about it, but they don't actually do it, and it frustrates me because I still think that the Australian Open particularly if it's played in the Sandbelt, because there's so many great courses down here, could still be one of the great tournaments. And I still feel cheated we don't have as much high-quality tournament golf here as we should, where the big names around the world come and play, as it used to be the case. And I know the reality is it doesn't happen anymore. And it is one of the reasons why so many people here in Australia are excited about LIV, because regardless of why they come and the fact that they have to come as part of their contracts, at least we are getting so many international golfers coming down and playing here in this country. That's why so many people have sort of gravitated towards LIV. Don't worry about the moral side of things. It's just the fact that they are here playing in this country that is a reason why so many people have become LIV fans. Just before we go to the break, EPL scores. If you don't want to know the scores, turn your radio down now, because there were four games overnight. Wolves 0, Bournemouth 1, Crystal Palace 2, Newcastle 0, Manchester United 4, Sheffield United 2, and Everton defeated Liverpool 2-0. First time in 10 years they've beaten Liverpool in a Merseyside derby at Goodison Park. And as a result of that, Arsenal now 3 points clear. They've got four games to go. So Arsenal 77 points, Liverpool 74 points through 34 games. Man City have got a game in hand, and they are on, in fact, they've got two games in hand, and they're sitting on 73 points. So that was a big, big loss there for Liverpool. And in the IPL overnight, the Delhi Capitals 4-for-224 defeated the Gujarat Titans 8-for-220. The reason why it was significant, Fraser McGurk got 23 off 14. Rishabh Pant made 88 as well. So it's great to see him back, not only just playing, but playing so well. But David Warner is still out of the team on form, and Fraser McGurk has taken his spot. Now, the reason why that is significant is, what does that mean now for Andrew McDonald and George Bailey and the Australian T20 team ahead of the World Cup? Is David Warner still in the best 11 if he can't get in his IPL team? I think it's an interesting conversation that we'll be having a lot over the next couple of months ahead of the World Cup in the West Indies and the USA. We're going to take a break. And as I said, Nick Haslam, the Executive Tournament Director of LIV Golf in Adelaide, he'll join us next live. Yes, Adam White filling in for Jared Waitley on this Anzac Day Thursday with Andy Maher and Andrew Gaze to join you from 12 o'clock today, a special edition. It's not really drive, is it? I'm not sure what they're going to call themselves today, but from 12 till 2 will be Andy and Gazy before the team led by Jared Waitley from 2 o'clock live from the MCG. Essendon and Collingwood into the Giants and the Lions. What a big day of football it is going to be. But it's also going to be from tomorrow a big 3 days of golf. SEN is the exclusive radio broadcaster of LIV Golf Adelaide, and the Executive Tournament Director of LIV Golf Adelaide, Nick Haslam, joins us live from the City of Churches. Nick, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Adam. How are you?
I'm all right, and I'm very excited, I must confess. I love my golf. So as I was saying before the break, to have so many high-quality international golfers here in Australia playing golf, it's pretty exciting.
Oh, it's so exciting. That's one of the things which made this tournament, you know, so attractive to fans. It's the second biggest participation sport in the country, golf, and we were able to attract, you know, some of the best players in the world by having this tournament here. So we're very excited to be able to make this tournament even bigger and better in 2024.
So how do you make it bigger and better? Because 2023 was fairly significant, being the first one and seeing the crowds that went there and the positivity around the tournament. How do you make it better?
Well, you know, we've worked really closely with the Grange Golf Club, and, you know, their general manager, Barry Link, he's a legend. He's always about working together as a team to make the tournament bigger and better. So we've got 14 viewing platforms this year, up from 4 last year, an additional hospitality structure. And it's all been about, how do we make the tournament be more, you know, attract more people? LIV Golf, whilst I talked about the golf enthusiasts, it attracts, you know, women, kids. There's an after-event concert. So just expanding that fan village, that offering for all sorts of consumers is what we've been focused on, as well as just making it more accessible. So, you know, capacity will go up. It was sort of, you know, up from 20,000 in 2023 up to 30,000 in 2024.
And that's significant increase to get 30,000 people around a golf course. And I talked about, well, how do you make it bigger and better? When you've got John Rahm, that helps. Adrian Maronk, who's won an Australian Open previously, and, you know, when he would join LIV, he was in the top 25 in the world. Tyrrell Hatton, and then even from an Australian point of view, Lucas Herbert joining it. It is an all-star cast. There's no question about that. You don't need a PR machine to pump it up.
Yeah, that's right, Adam. I mean, John Rahm signing and, you know, some of his comments in the media that he said, you know, he's joined LIV Golf and they said, what tournament are you looking forward to the most? He said, LIV Golf Adelaide right here at the Grange Golf Club. And, you know, that is, you know, what makes this so special. And we're so lucky, I feel, just to be a part of this event. You know, last night we had the welcome party. Dustin Johnson was there with Paulina Gretzky. We had, you know, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, they were all there. And just to be in the same room as these superstars is just sort of pinch yourself, but it's so good for golf in this country.
So as executive tournament director as you are, Nick, when you've got those names that you were talking about, and you throw in Brooks Koepka as well, Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, all guys that have won major championships, how are they to deal with, and how do they feel about how LIV's going as it currently stands?
Well, they're good to deal with. Firstly, you know, I'm staying in the same hotel as the players, and they're really good, down to earth guys. And how they feel about LIV Golf, I think it's the benchmark. Greg Norman said that publicly. This is the benchmark competition, which we're, you know, really proud of. And when they're here, they know it's good. I mean, 30,000 people on a golf course—that's as big as you're going to get anywhere in the world, really. And that's what we've been able to do. So they're loving it. There's a whole lot of, you know, we work really closely with the South Australian Tourism Commission and the Premier Peter Malinauskas to make sure that these guys are having as good a time as possible when they're here. So, you know, they love it. The golf course is in incredible condition. The course superintendent here, Rowan Damon, has just done an awesome job in making this course looking spectacular. So as far as the players are concerned, they all say they love it.
It's a particularly attractive golf course, but it's also not particularly long. So with the likes of DeChambeau and Koepka, they're the two that kind of stand out, that hit the ball as far as they do. Are we going to see a lot of low scores this week, or will pin positions mean that they'll try and make it as difficult as possible?
Yeah, I think we will see some low scores this weekend, Adam. I mean, I don't know for sure, but the forecast is looking pretty good. There was a bit of rain this morning, but there's not much wind around from what we could see in the forecast. And then, you know, to your point about it being a short course, they only drive really here consistently on 8 and 18 and sometimes 10, I think. So, and maybe 13, they might pull out the driver as well. But look, it is a course which is, it's in excellent condition, but they can shoot some really low scores. The greens are incredibly fast. They've done some work on the rough to make it, you know, difficult. If the guy's missing fairways, it's not that easy to get back, to get the sort of connection you want when you're approaching greens. But, we would be expecting low scores again. And to your point about pin positions, well, the famous 12th hole, the watering hole, as you would expect, Adam, we've been working with Rowan and Barry and his team to make those pin positions as achievable as possible for a hole in one.
So a little bit like the par 3 contest at the Masters, just sort of get the slope so it just rolls into the hole.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously serious competition.
Yeah.
And it's something that we want to make it as attractive to the fans as possible, and a hole in one helps. But we do work with the curator to make sure that the pin positions are something which is going to be attractive for fans to keep coming back.
I'm interested, Nick, from a tournament director point of view, one of the clear differences between, say, a PGA Tour event or a LIV event is the shotgun start. So we're all sort of hitting off at the same time. So from a spectator point of view, how much easier is that where you've got the the fans sort of dispersed more around the course rather than, say, following, you know, one or two groups, particularly on the first couple of rounds?
Oh, I think it's more attractive from a spectator point of view, and sometimes it's pretty painful from a tournament director point of view to organise the logistics around a shotgun start and getting all 54 players back from around the course to the clubhouse at the end of play. But that's part of the challenge, and we love it. But to your point around spectators, absolutely, Adam, it's great. You can be in the one spot all day and see everyone come through. You see a lot of people congregate on the watering hole, which is really the epicentre of the course, but they might go there with public access on, you know, one of the many viewing platforms around the course, and then they'll go somewhere else. So it's great because you've got a good opportunity to see every player.
Are you nervous as the tournament director? Just 24 hours out from it all getting underway, how are you feeling? What do you do between now and then?
I'll try and get some sleep, but that's challenging.
But I'm a little bit anxious, I guess, naturally, because you just don't know what to expect. 30,000 people around a golf course is a lot of people. But we've been diligently planning this one for 12 months. Last year we had 4 months preparation. This year it's 12. So just got to back our exceptional team. You know, I mentioned Barry and the Grange Golf Club crew already, but, you know, all of our team from around the world, the Live crew have come in. It's a team effort and we're very well prepared. So with that in mind, you know, there's some anxiety there, but I wouldn't say I'm super nervous.
Terrific. Thanks very much for joining us. I know how busy you are a day out. Really appreciate your time and good luck with the next 3 days.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Nick Haslam, Executive Tournament Director of Live Golf Adelaide. And a reminder, as I said before, SEN is the exclusive radio broadcaster of Live Golf Adelaide. You can hear all the action from 11:30 tomorrow. All you got to do is listen through the SEN app and through also SEN Fanatic. So leading the coverage for us will be Pat Welsh. And you'll remember Pat Welsh, apart from being part of the SEN family, was on Channel 7's coverage for all those years, out walking the fairways and then up in the commentary box. So he will lead our coverage along with Nick Del Santo and Matt Rogers. So Matt Rogers from a rugby league point of view and then Nick Del Santo from an AFL point of view, but both passionate golfers and both very good at golf. And then also Miles Fitzner somehow has got himself over there. So he's involved in the coverage as well as the Grands Golf Club's pro, Gary Simpson. So if you are heading along, make sure you take your headphones and you can listen live on course. And I've got to say, golf on the radio is really cool, I reckon, particularly if you are there. But it's such a great product. I was lucky enough to be involved in golf coverages on the radio in a past life. And it's fun to be part of it, but it's also really fun to listen to it as well. So that's from tomorrow on SEN Live from the Grange Golf Course in Adelaide. And we're talking about names. Some of the names that are being played this week, it is something to get excited about. John Rahm, Cameron Smith, Joaquin Neiman, who won the Australian Open last year, Bryson DeChambeau, Tyrrell Hatton, Taylor Gooch, Louis Oosthuizen, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Lucas Herbert, Patrick Reed, Adrian Morong, Paul Casey, Sergio Garcia. It's a cast of thousands. A break, and we'll wrap things up right after this. Yes, we have reached the end of the show. If you've missed anything on the McCafe menu, you can catch up on the podcast with Brenton Sanderson, Dustin Fletcher, Lee Broxham, Easton Wood, and also Nick Haslam. Thank you for everyone for listening today and for contributing throughout the course of the show. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you to Lincoln Allen and to Ollie Landos for all their great work behind the scenes. Andrew Gaze and Andy Marr are currently playing table tennis. They'll be next.